Let's see a little more about lights. This is so difficult for me, Chevra. I'm telling you, it really is difficult. It is difficult for two reasons for me to expound on this. Number one, who am I really to try to explain to you what this incredible mind, what this unbelievable soul called Rav Kook was capable of achieving in his lifetime in terms of being able to reach out and ta'amu u'ru'u and taste and touch the Ribono Shel Olam. Now, in the words of the commercial, reach out and touch someone. Here is a man who actually reached out and was capable of touching HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who knows, infinite numbers of times. There's no way to document these experiences. If you're a hard-baked intellectual, you know, just from the college campus, you'll call it, he had a mystical experience. All right? Who am I to interpret that? That's number one. But the second problem is a problem that all of us share here. We are a minion of people sitting around. We are all American males caught up in a singular lifestyle. We got to make our mark. We want to raise a family. We want to climb the ladder of economic success. We all work too much. We put in many too many hours. And as time goes on, we'll work even more. The only thing that's going to cut us down is, you know, when we have to limit ourselves because the feet won't go or the ticker is going to give us a warning signal. We are all so, no matter what we do, and we're in this ship together, we are all so economically focused. How in blazes can this ray of light get in when we need the clearing of the gashmias of the physical cobwebs to be able to allow this laser beam of ruchnias to come and strike us, so to speak? Now, with that introduction, when, not if, when you fall asleep on this, don't feel embarrassed, because it is the equivalent of not being able to hear certain decibels of the human ear. We just cannot hear it, and it takes work. And if you think that from the half an hour or the hour that we'll spend or 2 hours that we'll spend on this concept of trying to see the light, that you'll already be able to see the light, then you're fooling yourself. It's a total self-deception. The seeing of the light is a complete clarification and reordering of values which we all together don't share. Occasionally we'll open up the window and we'll allow it in. Occasionally. But you're at a disadvantage. You are learning from someone who is equally as wrapped up in this milieu, in this style of life, as you are. All right, so there's one small thing. You go ahead and spend your time on goods and services, and you do some intelligent things for this world. And I sit and I learn Chumash. I mean, it's as simple as that. So I get intelligent from it, not you. But at least you guys come and you put in an honest day's work and you provide a service for the world. What do I do? Let's try to do this, understand this. On page 5, on the fifth page, line 149, Rav Kook attacked this. When I said this wasn't me. This was gnawing at him constantly. It's this generation of the 20th century, and he lived in the 20th century. What he needed was, well, line 49 is letaheres alavavos. Our emotions, our thoughts, our values, our inner feelings somehow have got to be purified. Ulahasik et hamochot b'machshavot neetzalot. And how do I go ahead? You know what the word is, lahasik? Anyone have a fireplace at home? That's the word you use to go ahead and kindle the fireplace, lahasik. Okay? How do you kindle in the fireplace, kindle, light, ignite, set off in the mochos, in the minds of individuals, machshavos ne'etzalos, thoughts that are so sublime, that are so supreme, that are so godly. Now, yeah, but lahasik goes ahead and you kindle, lahasok is you yourself do it. Lasok is so close to the reflexive that you decide that you yourself are going to do this. Lahasik means to be able to turn someone else on. Okay? Now, how do you do such a thing? How do you purify? How do you kindle these thoughts in such a situation? Especially when Shemekoron Berazei Torah, the root of everything that we are talking about and speaking about is in the Raz of the secrets of Torah. Now, here, take a look at us. What is a shear that we want? We want a shear that will be able to understand another piece of Gemara, another legality, another technicality, another machlokes between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, another machlokes and perish between Rashi and Tosfos and the Rambam, and what do we mean? And we sit splitting every single letter and trying to understand and internalize every single word. This is what gets us.
It's technical.
Yeah, technical is the word. But we'll never get to the Rosei Torah, to the inner love and the secrets, this light that he speaks about sometimes, and we can follow this path down the line for 100 years and then some. You see, and elsewhere he says, let me tell you something. He says, it is the curse of the yeshiva world, the one who learns as a yeshiva shemensh. It is the curse of chassidim to think that they'll be happy and they'll sing and they'll patch kicharach, this is, right? And Ivdu es Hashem, the simcha, with the nigan and everything, as long as they put on a shtraimel. And we learned this already a couple of months ago. And they'll put chumrah on top of chumrah. And they think that they've reached this level of light. It's nonsense. He says, this is a curse. Because somehow to be able to reach out, and it needs reaching out, into the depths, Rosei Torah, into the depths of Torah, into that incredible scheme, that underneath scheme of love, Shir HaShirim style, of a desire to be kissed by Ribono Shel Olam. That is a dangerous situation in the sense that we're just not on the wavelength. If I have to give it to you in a technical sense, I say it over and over again. I'm a teacher, and a teacher is supposed to make sure that you learn and learn something forever. You want to get 97.9, the station that speaks your language, right? 97.9 FM, you want to get it? That's WEVD. That's what you want to get? So, and you put your car on 103.5. Would you ever expect to be able to receive the message? Never. You're just not tuned in. You're working with the same radio, you're working with the same frequency, the same bands, you're sitting in the same tunnel listening, or you're on the highway listening. But our technical mind would never, never expect to get a message from the station that speaks our language, 97.9, when we are tuned in to 103.5. We're just not. This is exactly what he is saying. We're tuned in all right, but we're on the wrong frequency. We've got to adjust that fine-tuning over there to get into the right channel. And what is necessary to be able to get this fine-tuning is going back with Taheres HaLevavos. It needs a process of purification. And what's more, I have to be able, and this is my fault. And Nebuchadnezzar, you should have picked a good Rebbe for these things. Lahasik es hamochos, to be able to fire up your minds that we're not working on old batteries over here. We're not going there. Now, this situation is not our problem. The end of line 150, it's Na'aseh Bador Ha'acharon Hechrech Gamur L'Kiyum Hayadus. He says, if he had to identify the one thing that was so necessary, hechrech, gamur, an absolute necessity, in this generation, in other words, this 20th century, that will allow Yiddishkeit to flourish, kiyum hayadus, the existence of Yadus, he says this is what has to be done. And this is how we have to turn on. Because learning, we're learning. Printing shasen, we've never in history printed more shasen than we've printed today. But at the same time, the flip side of the situation is there's never been such amaratzis, such total ignorance of anything, whether it's Chumash or Shas or Ivrit, anything, as there is today. But at the same time, you've heard me very comically knock art scroll. Could an art scroll exist if there wasn't this yearning deep down to try to hear, to try to understand? It never could. All right, so we're hamstrung because we don't know the language, so give it to me in my own language. But the concept called an art scroll couldn't exist in America until now. Now that we have the generation of Tihur HaMachshavos, that our thoughts are now purified to be able to go ahead and try to see the light. Line 152, V'yirida zuba atzma, this plummeting to the low level, Sheheviya es ha-hechrech, which has brought us to the absolute necessity of ha-ishtamshus be'emsa'i nisgav zeh, to have to worry about working at this sublime, at this very brilliant idea, hihi ha'aliyah. The fact that we have fallen so low, that is aliyah. That is, what does that mean? When you hit the bottom of the barrel, which way is there? There's only one way. There's only one way. If I may share with you, something that is so incredibly obvious, but we never... And psychiatrists are talking about it. Hasidus, the Ari, and many others realize that this is the case. When you see a Jew falling in any which way, you see a human being plummeting, it's probably a negative self-image. You're an alcoholic because you want to drain the pain of a negative self-image. You're a drug, you're a cocaine addict, negative self-image. So it eats your kishkasa, right? You start to scorn at that person. Now you're a piece of garbage. You can't do that. When you see a person plummeting downward, 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 what you have to do is realize that when that person hits the bottom of the barrel, there's only one way to go, and that's up again. And the only way that that person is going to get up is when you hit the bottom. If you can identify, and this is what Rav Kook is saying, Badora Acharon, if you can realize that in this generation, this 20th century, how far we have plummeted, what we lost in Europe, whether it's chassidim or yeshivas, the incredible loss that we had. If you can understand that this loss has brought us to the brink of just throwing in the towel. And out of this loss, what do we have? We have this incredible return, this messianic surge, learning like there's never been learning before in America. And I need not tell you that if it weren't for Eretz Yisrael, there wouldn't be a page of Gemara that we would understand, the fire, the ruach of all of us going over there to Eretz Yisrael and then coming back and igniting minds in every single yeshiva wouldn't have existed, couldn't have existed. Ashrei lemisha zocha lechach. And when I was learning in yeshiva 25 years ago, no one ever thought of going. There wasn't a shalvim to go to and 1,000 other yeshivas. Not for Bali Tshuva, not for, FFB, from birth. These things didn't exist. Absolutely didn't exist. In my father's days, he was here after World War I, so he had a chevrusa here on the east side who went to Hebron in 1929 and was killed in the slaughter over there. Whoever thought of these things? After that, no one ever thought of going to Eretz Yisrael. Today, who doesn't think of going to Eretz Yisrael? It's the exception to the rule. Because we have plummeted to the bottom, and now we are only in one way. It's one direction, man. It's all the way up. It's all the way up.
And that we have to get to that. We're not at that all the way up.
No. We're on an upswing now. There's no question about it. Don't let anyone tell you that we are on a downswing. There are indications now that we are on the most incredible upswing that you have ever had. You walk in the streets... And you never know whom you're going to be able to turn on. You just never know. Out of the clear blue sky, you say something, you do something. The door is so receptive. On the one hand, so callous. But on the other hand, so incredibly receptive. to letahera salavavos, to be able to purify hearts and be able to understand things. It's crazy. It's crazy. There's an incredible blend. I met a woman, I was telling it to some of you, I met a woman last Monday in Philadelphia. She's telling me how she celebrates Shabbos. And all of a sudden, there's a very gentle and tender soul, a professional, a social worker. All of a sudden, she grabs herself, she stops herself, because she was telling me about her non-halachic Shabbos. Now, she celebrates Shabbat, there are no two ways about it, with Hadlokas and Eros, and there has to be a Kabbalah Shabbos and an acceptance of a break between the weekday and the Tzoras and the serenity of Shabbos. The only trouble is she can't do it at 4:30 in Hadlokas and Eros, she's got to do it at 6:30 or 7. And her Shabbos, you see, and we would laugh at it. And her Shabbos, there's no question about it that it's comical. But listen to me carefully. Listen carefully. Her Shabbos with all of these flaws, you take the same person 25 or 30 years ago. Shabbos? You go to the movies Friday night. You go dancing Friday night. What kind of nonsense is this? You want friends over? You put the radio on, or you put the records on, the Victrola. You wind it up and you dance. What kind of nonsense? No, to sit at a Shabbos table with Hadlokas and Eros, with Lechem Mishneh, with Zimirot, and 10 people, and Birkat HaMazon, each in his and her own way, with all of these crazy things. There is such a mishmash over here, but can you see that? Do you know where this messed up mishmash daven for Rosh Hashanah? You'd think in some reformed temple. Nonsense. The only place she wanted to daven was with Lubavitch. That was the minyan she wanted to go to. And you see this yearning, this surging from the bottom of the barrel where we have never been so far, and suddenly there are opportunities that are just limitless, absolutely limitless, in being able to see what's going on. I've made the point, I hope I haven't overstated the case, but I believe that this is in four lines or five lines, this is a complete summary of the circumstance in which we're in. Yes, Dan?
I suffer a lot of intermarriage and things like that going on.
I don't deny it. That's what he is saying, that this Yerida is incredible. We're going to lose a tremendous amount, but we have never, as I say, within this way... Without question. And you know why? You know why? Because the quality of what we have now has never been in America. The quality of Yiddishkeit that we have now has never been in America.
Why does it have to be in America?
Well, because we're sitting here in America. Eretz Yisrael is on an upswing also.
Oh, but you could argue that Europe was on an upswing until 1930.
But that's gone. It doesn't exist anymore. Europe. Europe doesn't exist. It's gone. It's finished.
In Europe, it's a downstream.
Huh?
Except for Poland, it's a downstream all over Europe.
Except for Poland, yeah.
Germany.
Okay, but forget it. That doesn't exist. That's a parsha in history. I'm talking a parsha in reality. Where do we talk about Yiddishkeit today? Two places. Huh? Well, what is it? Do you have any? Where are you going to send your kids? Does anyone send a kid to learn in Europe today?
Switzerland?
Where?
Brooklyn.
How many people does Gateshead have? On one block in 16th Avenue, you have more Talmidim and Talmidus than you have in all of Europe put together. On one block. There is no Europe anymore. It doesn't exist. I don't know. Look, Russia is gone, Poland is gone, Eastern Europe is gone. There are 3,000 Jews in Germany. There's a Jewish community in Europe, in England.
Paris.
I mean, what, you don't, you know, what are the indicators of the throbbing heart? One of the first things after a butcher and a baker, when you know you have butchers and bakers, you know, that's an economic factor. What is the mark? The barometer of a cultural of a society of Torah. And that's a publishing. Certainly, that's a publishing thing. You go to New York, you see how many Sfarim, Mochri Sfarim there are, so-called book dealers. Go to Los Angeles, which is, I think, what, the second largest Jewish community in the United States. Go see what they sell. Go to Philadelphia, which is the fifth largest. Go see what they sell. Nothing, zeroness. It all comes from New York. There are more Svarim published in Eretz Yisrael today per capita than any other country in this civilized world. Do you know what that says? We're the Am HaSefer once again. We are not these ignoramuses. You cannot go ahead and do something unless you have books. Do you know the city of Passaic, up until 40 years ago, what it did to sponsor Svarim printed? 937 Svarim were printed by people who gave money and donated money from Passaic. That speaks of a cultural status over here. Now that's gone, that's lost. The next Sefer that was published, aside from Rabbi Katz's PhD, which was published in Eretz Yisrael, well, Rabbi Katz is a native Passaic, or we'll call him indigenous to Passaic, and one other book. The next Sefer was the Tanya that was printed in Bnei Yaakov, in Young Israel. That was the next one in 40 years. But it's a milestone. And the same thing, why do I have to talk about America? Because the publishing industry, the Jewish book publishing industry in America, has never been what it is now. There is another Sefer coming out every single day, and in Eretz Yisrael every single hour. These are indicators of this Rosh HaTorah, this how much more is there to write about? And there is, and people are buying. You don't write books today, except these what they call the vanity publishers. Good, how many books come out that way where I will pay to publish the book, so that my grandchildren or whatever will see my picture in the front of the book.
So directly coming from the effects. Art scroll seems to be a phenomenon in America of our instant gratification and must do something, get something, learn something, absorb something in an instant and not spend years in going to yeshiva, just pick it up, learn, and you're a scholar.
Well, not necessarily out of need or out of wanting, but sometimes it's need. Like, obviously, as we know, people who didn't have the opportunity to spend years in yeshiva, right. But they have to have this instant gratification.
No, it serves a useful purpose and to many people, but there are so many other fields where how to improve your memory in 10 easier steps and how to get strong and how to do this and that. That's one thing. The other thing about when you go down to the bottom of the barrel, the only way is up. I seem to recall that with Mitzrayim, we were, and you correct me, so to say properly, we're down the 49th step of Tumah, and with the implication if we would have gone down one more, it would have been gone.
Yeah.
That's it, there's no going up.
Well, okay.
So you can go down enough that you stick to the bottom and you can't go up, I guess, right?
Well, that was the paradigm. That was certainly the paradigm for Geula, that by an inviolable bris with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there is never going to be a going through the bottom of the barrel so that you can never recuperate. Okay, the Ari picks up on this in Kabbalah and calls this the Shviras HaKelim. Go ahead, Wilma gives you a Pyrex bowl. Give me this. Give it to me for a moment. Make oh, it's plastic. So okay, it's glass. Well, here this is crockery. Okay, Wilma give this to you, and Wilma says to you, Mike, I want you to be careful. It's hot. But take it outside on the porch so it can cool off a little. And don't be a klutz, and don't drop it. And Mike takes four steps, and boom, the chicken soup is all over the floor, and this is broken. Is there ever any hope that this crock pot is going to go ahead and contain chicken soup again? There's not. Comes the Ari in Shviras HaKelim and says, when it comes to Ruchnias, the difference between this pot of chicken soup that is probably irreversible and can never, the situation can never be changed. And the ruchnius of a human being is because the source of the human being is the chelek eloka mimal, is the divine spark personified. That when the kelim are broken, should you break this so-called container, then there's only one thing that flies out of it, not the chicken soup, but nitzotzos of Elohim, the sparks of divine, of godliness. The Chumash says it in a very interesting way. Umaltem es orlas levavchem. We can take the nut called the heart and break the shell, get through the coconut to the essence. We're not going to break the coconut. that we're going to be able to create a whole new flood of ruchnius that is necessary, you see. So that...
Where does that phrase come from?
What, umalta?
Helek aloka
mimal? Comes from... It's all over.
Gemara?
Yeah, sure. You can have this.
No, same phenomenon in Russia, where you reach the body, that now you have this resurgence.
No question about it. No question about it. When you speak about Russia, but it's so much more limited. There is no doubt that what Hitler did not succeed in doing, and that is to destroy the Jewish dimension of life, Stalin and communism did succeed. Ella, there is a Shvira Sakelin, to be able to go ahead and appeal to a communist who is far more cold-blooded than a capitalist, you see, far more cold-blooded, and still be able to get the message that there is a God, there is a master scheme and a design in this world. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. But unfortunately, we will lose the overwhelming majority. It'll only be the infinitesimal minority. Go to page 6. Let's take another look at the light.
Why Dor HaCharon?
Because we have never, Dor HaCharon, in this generation, the 20th century, we have never been so materialistic. Never, never, as now.
Well, at least we are now.
Never. Okay.
Rav Cook was saying this back in the 30s.
Yeah.
What do we have now?
Okay, I would really say that substantially there has been no difference. We're on the same economic, although I'm not an economic professor. You know, the market is the market in the 30s as it is in the 80s. The basic philosophies of economy are probably the same. Economists, and I don't understand them entirely, come with minor adjustments.
Do we have the negotiations that we have today?
Yes, without question.
$100,000
cost? Yeah. Without question we had it. Without question we had it. Yeah. And I don't want to get off of the subject, but the $100,000... The $100,000 chasanas are not what you think they really are. Okay? Because, Bruce, you know and I know that when you go to the office, the chitzonius, the external, your external veneer, the way you're dressed, does have a psychological impact on the success that you will have in your profession. You are, for 1 minute, not ready to sacrifice that. Okay? The style of our clothing, we will choose along those lines also. And we will say to ourselves, this is essential. It's, you know, totally essential. All right? Now, these $100,000 weddings have become essential, an essential function and extension of all the values that all of us espouse. We want to make it big. And the only way to make it big is to tell our friends that we can spend $100,000 on a wedding. Because if we'll spend $100,000 on a wedding, then our friends will know we made it big. And if our friends will know we made it big, we'll even get bigger. And if I sell insurance, they'll come to me because of that. Simple as that. So it's no different. In a sense, it's no different than you and I going and buying a $300 suit or a $400 suit and going into the office, whether it's on Madison Avenue or on Fifth Avenue or on Sixth Avenue, wherever it is, and moving among people. I'm not condoning it, not at all. But it is not a new manifestation. The only difference that we have between a $100,000 wedding today and a $100,000 wedding, let's say, between World War I and World War II, and boy, they were. They did have such weddings. Is that the gevir in Europe always looked to pack the place with schnorrers. The more schnorrers he had, the better off he may have been. You know why? So that everyone knew that he was a tzaddik. You see. The world has to know that you have to be a tzaddik. Today, we want to get rid of, you know, this whole... We want fancy people over here. And the same thing is happening in yeshivas. We start to judge a yeshiva and say it's good if it is capable of putting up an incredibly beautiful building, because it means obviously that we have the right message. It's not so obvious.
Is there a halakhic limit to how many good things we can adorn our lives with?
Yes. And the halakhic limit is a sense of balance. It's called homeostasis. It's what the human being needs for his and her balance. And each one has a different balance. Simple as that. One thing we do know. On the one hand, when you go overboard, you'll already feel that it'll be counterproductive. On the other hand, when you become a miser and go overboard the other way, so Mishnah tells you, Godol ha-ne'ne mi-yegia kapov. It is a great person who is capable of enjoying the fruit of his labor, Yoser mi-kabolos p'nei ha-shechina, more than even going ahead and being able to enjoy the presence of the Shechina. Because the fight, the absolute fight in all of life, is being able to juggle the answer to the question that you just asked. And each one has his and her limits. To be able to know what is correct and enjoy it and not worry, not turn into an Uncle Scrooge, because who knows what will be tomorrow. Tomorrow you can lose everything. This is the big challenge. Let's go to number six. Chol. The word chol means mundane, everyday. The Yiddish is vochadik. Bispaklaria shel kodesh, when viewed against the canvas, the background of kodesh. Achat me'atuudot shel hisgalus v'zei haTorah, one of the purposes, one of the objectives of getting us to try to understand this inside, the inner essence of Torah, ba'olam, he, in this world, is Lahashkif gamal hachol mitoch aspaklaria shel hakodesh, to be able to take every single thing which we call secular and color it on the canvas of kodesh. Lada, so that we know, and this is really in the next six words, is probably the whole teaching of Kabbalah. If you want to parade up and down and say that you've learned Kabbalah, these six words will probably tell you more than anything else, will reveal to you everything. Ladas, if you can only know and find the ways, she'ein be'emet chol muchlat ba'olam, there is no such thing as absolute secular things. Because by definition, in this world, if something is secular, what is removed from it? What is distilled out of it? The Kodesh. We don't hold that way. There is no such thing as chol. There is no such thing. If it exists, if we can conceive of it, if it can be touched in this world, then it has to have kodesh. Ul'umat zeh, and as opposed to this, kol ha-medidot shel kodesh, whenever you measure kodesh, limdod, to measure what is kadosh and what is more kadosh, kechol hein, These are so secular when you compare Kodesh legabe or HaKodesh HaElyon. If you were able to compare it and refer it to what the real joy of this upper light is. We put on talis and we put on tefillin and we come and daven and we come and learn and we sit here and work at Torah. We go at it. We wear tzitzis. And we worry about mezuzahs, and we are just incredible today when it comes to kashrus, Baruch Hashem. We work at it, we spend such an incredible amount of energy in this kedusha, in this kodesh activity. And if you could only take all of the efforts, the learning, and the feelings, and put them together, and try to refer them to what the real kodesh is, and that's just to be able to grab out, and to reach out, as Shir HaShirim says, achastiv. I grabbed on to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'lo al penu, I swear to you, I'm not going to let go. Can you imagine yourself being separated from the love of your life, and you're on a train platform, love story style, or Dr. Zhivago style, and you're on a train platform, and she reaches out to you through the window of the train, and then reaches back and runs, where you get off, in between the cars,
so, and you're running and running and running, and you're reaching out trying to grab her hand, and you're running on the station, and you keep on running, and the faster you run, you don't care, you go. Can you imagine yourself doing this? You probably would lose yourself and just get smashed into a post or whatever. This is the achastin below our penu. I grabbed onto HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I swear to you, I'm not going to let go of you. It's Shabbos. L'chododi l'kras kala, right? You told me, Rabboni Shel Olam, that this is the wedding day. That Shabbos is the honeymoon between Klal Yisrael and who? And you. So let's go, Dodi, my beloved, and let's stay together. Hisnari me'of arkumi, I'm taking off my work clothes. I am getting the filth and the dirt off of me. Livshi bigdei sifaltech, I am putting on my favorite suit, the suit that you like best, bigdei Shabbos. Okay? And let's get going. Boi b'shalom. Come, sweetheart. And I swear to you, I'm grabbing onto you for 25 hours called Shabbos, and I ain't letting you go. I'm not letting you go. Is that the way we observe on Motzei Shabbos? It's time to daven. Hey, man, I got a movie at 7:13. Come on, I gotta go. You see. So when you take all of this kedusha, you just come to Young Israel, and the Shalosh Shudas goes over 43 and a half seconds. You see already what the problems are. And it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. It's any of us. Hey, come on, man. I'm missing the show. I got the Academy Awards tonight. I got to get back. Let's go. This is the Ahasti Velar Penu. He says, this is the same thing. Take all the Kodesh, any Kodesh that I could describe to you, says Rav Kook, and try to refer it to the feelings of just seeing for one infinitesimal second right before Mila is over. For one fraction of a second, like, you know, the aperture of a camera, the lens, right? What do we shoot at? 1/250th of a second, boom. And it makes a permanent impression forever. Give me 1/1000th of a second of this Or HaElyon. That's that one, Yiddish is Augenblick, that one blink of the eye. Doesn't compare to the totality of all the kedusha that we work and we try to generate. Mimekor Ein Sof, just being able to see this light from the source of the Ein Sof, of this infinite God, and people can see it. And this is what he is saying. We are so damned hard baked, we are so incredibly rational, we are so close to the reception of this light that we just never let it in. This is why, this is the futility of mitzvah sometimes. You know, this is why at the end of time, when we get old and rickety, so sometimes one of the stages of degeneration, of human degeneration, is you become very cynical. What was it all for? Was it necessary? Did I have to kill myself? It was useless. I failed. I didn't make a mark at all. Go, understand how, if you could only ignite the lights in the minds and the hearts of people, whoever they are, each to his own, you and your family and just over there, and I, let's say, cross country, big deal. Who knows? This is the light that we have to strive for. This is what should have been in our minds when we lit Hadlokas Ner Chanukah, because the Chashmonoim were the ones who decided that they were going to ignite the hearts of that Nitzotz Eloka, of those Jews who were going to stand up against the Misyavnim, against this insane assimilation, this self-hate and this negative self-image, to be able to stand up against all odds. And with that they succeeded. And this is the Neis Chanukah. Absolutely, the Or is the Neis Chanukah. I'll tell you clearly, I'm not so impressed that it burned for 8 days. That's no big deal. That it lasted for 200 years, that's what impresses me. Do you know anything today when politics is involved, when leadership is involved, that can last for 200 years? The Vilna Gaon lived 200 years ago. Could you tell me where his dynasty is? The Baal Shem Tov lived 210 years ago. I want a direct descendant. Oh yes, I know there are at least 73 Hasidic sects that say that they are only the authentic Baal Shem Tov Nikkes. They are the only ones, right? The Ari lived 400 years ago. Lubavitch claims that they are the only ones who know how the Ari davened. And when you go into a good library, you'll see there are at least 16 or 17 different versions of the Ari. Okay? Can you show me? Chashmonaim lasted for 200 years. The aura of that menorah lasted for 200 years. Until finally, Baruch Hashem, you know how they broke up. The Chashmonaim broke up. I told you, remember? There was a queen mother. Her name was Shlomtzion HaMalka. It's the last page of Maseches Sota, if you want to see it. Shlomtzion HaMalka had two sons. Aristobulus was one, and Yochanan Hyrcanus was another. One was a great administrator. He was a good king. The other one was Frum. The great administrator was the older one. The Frumer one was the younger one. And the mother chose her successor. Let the younger one be the king. So the older one says, it ain't going to be, and I'm going to start a civil war. And at the time of the civil war, and the civil war broke out in Yerushalayim, that's where they lived. Pompey, who was a Roman general, was 45 miles to the northeast of Israel in Damascus, Syria. And he had just conquered Syria. So the older brother sent a delegation to Pompey and said, you support me in this civil war, and I will pay taxes to you forever. And Pompey said, older brother, you got it, babes. I'm with you all the way. When the younger brother heard that this is what the older brother did, so the younger brother sent a delegation to Pompey, and he said, listen, this is what you got to do. You got to support us. We'll pay taxes double. And Pompey said to the younger brother's delegation, you got it, babes, all the way. When the board of rabbis, the Sanhedrin, heard that both brothers sent, you know what the board of rabbis did? They sent a delegation, you know, yeah, to Pompey in Syria, Damascus. And you know what they said? We're the board of rabbis. We're the spiritual leaders. We know that this brother is no good and this brother is no good. You support us. And boy, will we pay taxes. We'll even pray for your souls. And Pompey said to them, pray for our souls. Brothers, you got it, man. You got it. And he walks into Yerushalayim and there wasn't a sword lifted. Not one of the factions went ahead and beat his armies and legions down. You know why? Because they all believed that he was supporting them. He walked straight into the Beis HaMikdash, and the Gemara and Sota says it was like a pig that put its nails into the walls of Yerushalayim, and on a Richter scale, Eretz Yisrael shook at a rate of 400. That was the first presence of Rome in the year, it's about 50 BCE, before the Common Era. That was the beginning of the Churban. Oh yes, the Churban was actually 120 years later, but that was the end of the Hashmonean dynasty. Simple as that. From Or, huh? Or from the most incredible falsified Choshech that lived in this world. That you had to curry favor with Rome, the process of politics, and you just couldn't see what you were destroying. Two brothers in a civil war brought down a 200-year light that lit for 200 years and didn't go out. And it was a crazy light also. Chashmonaim were Kohanim. Were Kohanim entitled to be Melochim, kings? What Shevet had Melucha? What Shevet had kingship? Yehuda. David ben Yishai. We never accepted Kohanim to be kings. But this incredible ray of light that they brought lasted for 200 years of hope. That's a difficult one. It has to be understood.
When you mentioned that, I was kind of well with some IMD that I kind of sent down and barred themselves onto earth for us to learn and observe and do. And that we're maybe not supposed to be looking up there anymore for filling up our religious stuff. We're supposed to be everywhere.
Yeah, go find out.
I'm telling you, go find out. That is our quest. But when you say lo bashamayim hi and say there's no need for it to climb up, that is what you have, what we spoke about, Rav Kook's charge of this prostifunkheit, this frumkeit that is so totally devoid of any kedusha. That's, he's saying it right over here, but in such a much more elegant way. Take all your Shabbos and all your kashrus and all your chinuch and all your yom tov, everything that we consider kadosh, and just try to refer it to the kedusha of this Or HaElyon, being able to be kissed by one called God. In some which way, and again, I cannot define that mystical experience for you now, but we're arguing here to just try to see that there is something way beyond what we all do. So way beyond. And take it and refer it to that Or HaElyon, and you'll see that it doesn't begin to compare to the Or that we have from this Lo Bashamayim Hi, from this lower level of light. I don't know, it's a different, just so totally different frequency and wavelength. And this is what he is arguing. And you cannot understand it unless you combine Limud HaTorah with an aspiration to try to see what is so way above and beyond. And the way above and beyond is to be able to talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is listening. And here is a paradoxical reversal that you know I've referred to several times. There are people who don't begin to know how to daven. There are two in particular in young Israel, one who does know how to daven and one who mamish doesn't know how to daven. And I'm telling you, they talk to God. The kind of talking to God that in all the 17 years that I've stood on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur in front of the Omer, I was only able to feel maybe once or twice in all those years. Once or twice. The year after Daniel was sick. The year that Daniel was sick, let's say, and one other time. It's a paradoxical reversal, this Lo Bashamayim Hi. Elama. It may take you 25 years to work at it. And then I don't know what's going to happen in 25 years. It may be for an instant second. Is it worth just an instant second? That's what he is saying. If you compare your 25 years of all of your frumkeit, in every shade, in every brand, and, you know, on every street, wherever you go, you take it all and try to refer it to this Or HaElyon, a concept which we admitted here an hour ago that we don't know about it. We are so clouded. We are not on the language, you know, the station that speaks our language. We're on a different frequency. So you've got to work for 25 years. All right? I want to beg you. I am not capable of keeping my head up any further. I will give you a rain check for the second half another time. I can't even breathe.